For March 29th, 2012, we've got some infinities to deplete on a very special episode of Video Games Hot Dog. I'm Zach.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kevin.
And it's another episode of Video Games Hot Dog. I had to stop these guys from singing songs from musicals long enough to actually record a
religious
podcast.
Musicals, for what it's worth.
Here's a problem. I feel like I'm going to go in to edit this, and as I listen to it, I'm going to think
we were
too drunk to actually record this podcast, and I should not ever play this for anyone.
It's going to be fine.
But if you're hearing this, it clearly means that against my better judgment, well, it probably meant that I got drunk again before I edited and released it. I've decided to attack this problem by drinking some more
beer.
Yeah. We had some, so we managed to get some margaritas, even though we're away from our usual margarita hunt.
They were shitty margaritas.
They were pretty shitty. They weren't that expensive, but they were pretty shitty. Yeah,
they were really small, though.
They were small and
all
strong.
All the cocktails were
and
small.
Filled with ice.
Yeah.
You got some gross-ass cocktails after that margarita.
They were spicy.
They were better.
They had herbs in them and flowers.
Spicy is not the right same thing as flowery.
Well, you had basil in one, and you had a flower in another.
What kind of flower was it?
Hibiscus.
Hibiscus.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I had another one that was basil and grapefruit.
All tequila based.
All tequila.
You were sticking to tequila.
Yeah.
All right.
I mixed wine with tequila.
Yeah. Beer.
Man.
I didn't know.
You had beer before.
I had beer earlier. Yeah.
One of the only, one of the three times that I threw up from drinking was mixing wine and tequila.
Like just in a vat?
Yeah. I just had it. I was like, hey, I heard that you can mix different kinds of things together to make cocktails. Let me try this.
I've always wanted to try my hand at alchemy.
It was weird. I think I got sick from gold poisoning.
I spent a lot of time when I was a kid mixing stuff that I found around the house together to try to make cool looking potions and putting them in potion bottles.
I did that lot at my grandmother's house, but put them into old pill bottles that she saved.
Huh.
Did you have older siblings that you made drink them? Because I had
soap and detergent and stuff like that. It was like they were cool, you get shampoo. And conditioner and stuff like that, and that makes that sort of like pearlescent kind of stuff, and then you get like some blue food coloring, and you shake that up, and it like turns this like sort of blue pearlescent stuff.
See, we just used like a lot of spices, probably from the 30s, and a lot of expired medications. So it was doubly important that we not actually drink the potions that we made.
Medications, yeah. I don't think I had anything that was psychoactive, but I think I had probably had things in there that would be toxic and or poisonous.
Just make good old-fashioned mud pies and potions out of like
an old-fashioned mud pie. Is that like whiskey, bitters?
I remember reading about people making mud pies, but I didn't ever really understand why you would do that. It just seems like a thing that you would do if you were like destitute.
I was
like out in the alley behind the orphanage.
For what it's worth, the road looks like it's going backwards in my current
game. No, it does, yeah. So, yeah, this is going to be a fairly structureless episode of Video Games Hot Dog because all any of us have been doing and all any of us are continuing to do during
the show. I'm level 1092.
Playing these roguelikes. Yeah,
there were some pretty good ones in there.
There were, really, actually a bunch.
Yeah, there were. But first, one of the things that I wanted to bring up was this book that I've been reading. I bought a book at GDC. You were there. I bought two books at GDC. One was a very dry academic treatise on the notion of the quest.
The quest,
that then included in the second half of it is a lot of pseudocode from whatever language you use to design content for Neverwinter Nights.
Okay.
Really?
I'm curious how that's going to go. But I bought this other book, and it's called Masters of Doom, How Two Guys Created an Empire and Transformed Pop Culture. And it's written by a guy who is pretty good at writing a book, but pretty terrible at writing the individual sentences that make up a book.
Isn't a book made up of a bunch of sentences?
Yeah, I'm like two-thirds of the way through, and it's just the story of id Software, right? Like, it's just about
John
Carmack
Romero.
And Romero and those dudes and their history. But there are two passages that I would like to share with you guys and our readers. So one is the last, it's a one-sentence paragraph that I think is supposed to be ominous and foreshadowing. But control at id Software was all the more difficult to be found.
Wow.
I know. Isn't that just about the worst set of words?
Control
at id Software was all the more difficult to be found. But this one,
what does that mean?
That's like a dangling
infinitive. Was hard to find control. So what it seems like is that maybe this guy was using some sort of backwards version of WordPerfect that would tell you, wait a minute. This sentence is not in the passive voice. You should you should fuck it up so that it doesn't make any sense and is in the passive voice. But this one is great. The challenge, as Abrash heard it, was to increase cyberspace through 3D graphics and a persistent online world, an alternate world that would live and breathe around the clock, waiting for players to cohabit. So the weird ending, waiting for players to cohabit, or yeah. So, but the thing is, if you take this sentence and you take out every word that is that like the smallest germ of a complete sentence in here, the challenge was to increase cyberspace. So that's after reading that, I put a post-it note on the wall with our new corporate mission statement, which is just to increase cyberspace. We need to make sure that everything that we do furthers our goal of increasing cyberspace.
When we leave this rental apartment, you should put that post-it behind one of the paintings. Behind one of the
paintings, ooh. Just leave it there. It's like a sweet Easter egg.
Yes.
I mean, I think it can't help but passively increase the cyberspace of everybody who comes in here.
Sure.
And who knows, you know, maybe there'll be some history-making.
So do you think that is just a bullshit phrase, increase cyberspace, or do you think that that actually has some meaning?
I don't think that it does, because I mean it's
so like when they made World of Warcraft, did that increase cyberspace because it created a bunch of like both conceptual spaces worlds. and also communities and stuff like
I mean
that?
I think what it did was it helped to realize the ideas of cyberspace, right? It helped to make cyberspace more of a thing that was a real thing, but I would not describe that as increasing it.
Okay.
Well, I mean, what do you define as cyberspace? Do you take the, you know, the cyberpunk view of it?
Yes, or well, I mean, I think Gibson gets to decide.
I mean, but I mean, today's day and age, a lot of people spend a lot of time on the internet or in cyberspace in an increasing amount.
Okay.
I mean, does that count?
So, I mean, like, so let's say that I start drinking a lot more coffee out at places that sell it. Would you describe me as a person who is increasing cafe? Coffee space? No, I mean, like, that's the thing. Am I increasing cafe by spending more time in a cafe?
But you are a person creating cafes. You are certainly increasing coffee space. Okay,
so do we as a company increase video game
space?
Sure, okay.
Every time you're using like
so it makes more sense definite and indefinite
nouns, right? Because like space is like a how much space, not how many space, right?
You can increase the amount of space.
Is it cyberspace space or cyberspace? Like is
yeah, wait, like, maybe
okay, their goal is to make cyberspace larger.
No, maybe they're trying to increase the number of robots in outer space.
Okay. Are any of them actually doing that? Is Carmack involved in any of the?
I think Carmack might be.
Yeah, I think he is. Who's I think SpaceX? He's putting some money in space.
One of them is SpaceX, though. They're launching robots into space like right now.
Are they now?
Well, I don't know. Scheduled as the first mission to take up stuff to the space shuttle.
Are they robots or are they like just a computer? Well, I mean, is a computer with arms a robot?
It's a computer. Does that
computer
that
have arms?
It can do stuff. Like, oh, does it have to have arms to be a robot?
I think it does. You can't love a child with robotic arms. Anyway, so yeah, we hope to increase cyberspace for the rest of this podcast. Are you continuing to play fucking roguelikes while we're supposed to be doing a show? You better.
I'm looking
not
up
be
John Carmack
ready.
To see what
his see who's in space.
Space
to see whether or not John Carmack is in space right now.
So, if you think this podcast has increased your cyberspace, tweet us.
Yeah, let us know. Let us know whether you think we have increased or decreased cyberspace at the end of this.
And if we haven't, how we could? Right, I mean, exactly. It's our goal.
Yeah. What have you guys been up to?
Yeah, he's doing space stuff.
He's doing space. Leave him alone. He's doing
Lunar Lander Challenge.
I've been doing some space.
Don't come in here, Mom. I'm doing space.
Armadillo Aerospace is John Carmack's company.
Okay.
Well, they don't have a contract to send stuff to the space station. He's failing to increase cyberspace.
So this past week I have started and finished in like 2 days Ready Player One.
Okay.
Which was... I think awesome. I'm going to have a hard time recommending it to a generic person, like not knowing anything about who they are or what their interests are.
A generic person's too busy eating white bread.
If you listen to this podcast and enjoy it.
And you are probably 32?
I think anywhere between 30 and 40 probably.
Okay.
You will probably get a kick out of Ready Player One. It is definitely right up our alleys.
I hope that we can one day increase cyberspace to the point where the things that happened in that book are real.
It was a lot of fun to read. I definitely like put everything else on hold while I was reading it.
It was weird because it was sort of like Richard Garriott as Steve Jobs and that other guy as Wozniak. And then there was,
yeah,
I don't know, who were the bad guys? Google?
I don't even know who.
Yeah.
It was your faceless cyberpunk megacorp.
Cybercorp. Cyber like the bad guys in Tron, maybe. It was Dillinger.
Sure.
Yeah.
That guy's penis is in a jar somewhere in the Smithsonian.
I don't think archives. It was like the most adroit writing I have ever read, but it was definitely.
Well, for somebody who's using a word like adroit, I can see why it might.
How'd you feel about
might
the
not
mysteries?
Cut the muster.
The what?
The puzzle. I mean, were you solving it ahead of the main character?
Some of it a little bit, and some of it not at all. Like, so there were like, you know, a bunch of riddles and stuff like
that.
I don't
think they really count as riddles.
The second one, I was like, the first thing I thought of was the solution to the thing, and for whatever reason, they didn't like. The main character and hundreds of other people didn't think of it for
because
weeks.
Because it's 50 years from now, and you have the advantage of being contemporary with all of the things
but
that are happening,
they
right now, including the writing of
studying,
the book Ready Player One.
They have probably played through all of the
and participated things. In a game that creates a parody of the game, which has the puzzle that is created on, worded on.
I would not have been able to get any of
you're the most boring dinosaur word.
The Rush references.
Yeah, Rush. Yeah, I never got into Rush.
I never got into Rush.
Is that cool song about the trees? All I know is that Rush and Green Day, man, they really had a battle back in the BBS days. That was all the BBSs were about.
Really, was fighting about which was better between Rush and Green Day.
Rush and Green Day. At least,
Cool. Huh. See, I was only ever on BBSs that only had one phone line, so the only person that I could argue with was myself. And so it was always like, hey, man, they might be Giants rules. No, they don't. They are awesome.
You didn't ever participate in like forums or anything?
Yeah, there weren't really.
That was my primary means of communication.
They weren't particularly active. It wasn't until I discovered Usenet my senior year of high school that I really started talking to dudes about they might be Giants.
Sure. So I went to a Magnetic Fields concert.
Yeah, I went to that too. And so did Chris.
I did too.
Yeah.
You
guys were there?
You were not at all familiar with the Magnetic Fields. How did you find the concert, Chris?
It was pretty awesome. I like a band where some people play some instruments and sing, and there's lyrics that you can understand, and they were amusing.
Yep. And like the three different members of the band sang.
There was some harmony, which I like some harmony.
And then everybody had pretty different instruments.
Yeah, piano, mandolin, guitar,
cello,
theremin. Did somebody play a melodica?
Is that the thing where whatever you blow into and plus keys on?
That's a saxophone. No. Bagpipes.
Come on. It looks kind of like a harmonica. But
a Trump accordion.
Accordion, but you don't like squeeze it, instead you blow. I think it's a melodica.
A melodica is like a little keyboard, that's about a foot long that also has a blowhole on it.
But I think there's also really big ones.
But there's not a bellows. I don't think there's a big
melodica.
Maybe
that's a baby melodica.
I think the thing that was in front of him was a big. Yeah, I think it's a melodica. Yeah.
Maybe it was one of those fan powered ones. My grandma had this thing that was like a little organ that you turned on an electric fan that blew. Through it was like basically an accordion, accordion.
It was a melodica.
He was drinking a melodica. He was also playing a mimosa,
which is also a tequila-based beverage.
Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go.
What else, man? Are you okay there, buddy?
Yeah. So, my mom had to check her bank statement this week. But she had made the mistake of upgrading Safari.
What does it mean to check your bank statement?
She doesn't get paper statements anymore, so they email her and they're like, you have a statement ready. And so she, of course, goes to there and then just prints it out.
Okay.
Because, you know, no paper statements.
That saves a stamp.
I guess it saves a stamp.
No, she doesn't have to throw away an envelope.
Sure.
Does she balance her checkbook then?
She does, yeah. I also balance my checkbook.
You also balance your mother's checkbook?
Yeah. No.
You also balance my checkbook, which is, I guess, why I can be so cavalier about it.
So she updated her Safari or whatever, and she went to the website, and she's like, and they said, Safari will not work on this website. And she tried to go anyway, and it just kept loading infinitely and never actually resolved. And I was like, okay. And so she's like, they say I need to use
Mozilla Jungle
Firefox
Bunny or Chrome.
I don't know what those are. Help. And so I VNC'd into her machine, and I was like, well, let's try Firefox. And so I installed Firefox on her computer, And I was like, okay, let's go to your bank website. And so we went to the bank website, and it was like, she was able to log in fine. And then she tried to click on her statement, and it's like, Firefox asked, what do you want to do with this, you know, statement.do file? And I was like, okay,
what is a .do file?
It's like
I don't know.
It is, as far as I know, it's like a JavaScript, like, action file or whatever. It is something that all browsers are supposed to be able to natively run.
Does the phrase JavaScript action file mean anything?
That doesn't mean anything.
Okay.
Nice try,
Kevin.
Probably it's a Java servlet extension.
Okay.
Which runs on the server side and should have just given her a file to download. Yeah,
that seems like a problem with the web server and not a problem with the browser.
Well, except that, so I was like, well, Firefox should be able to handle this. This is totally a reasonable thing. And so I was like, okay, Firefox should open this, and then Firefox should open all future instances of this. And so what it managed to do was just open 100 windows on her screen and just kept filling up her screen with Firefox windows. And I was like, okay, Firefox is clearly not going to work for you here.
I mean, that never works. Whenever Firefox says, what program do you want to use to open this? If you say Firefox, it's just going to do that again.
Yeah. Over and like over.
Because if it knew what to do with it, it wouldn't have asked.
Yeah, but it was wrong because
it knew what to do with it.
Right. So then you installed Chrome.
So I installed Chrome, and then it worked just fine.
How many browsers does one mom need?
I know, right?
Three.
Apparently three.
I mean, the answer is three.
I removed Firefox because screw that noise.
Yes, the answer is two.
Okay.
So right now she just needs two.
As it turns out, two browsers.
Yeah. So that was like an hour of my day yesterday. It's just like, my mom does not call me anymore except for when she needs tech support.
No, that's not true. Wait, I'm thinking of me.
Yeah.
Your mom calls me all the time.
Yeah, sure.
How's Kevin? I don't want to talk to him because I got to use my time for tech support.
Yeah.
He'll only talk to me about tech support. He only talked to me an hour a week.
Yeah.
You guys been playing any video games that aren't the assignment?
I'm kind of a broken record lately. I have been playing... I kept playing Draw Something after the last show, and then I kept playing Move the Box because there were all those new levels, which, I mean, I'm still in the middle of those. And then I played a bunch of Minecraft.
Yeah. There was a lot of wall punching and a lot of, God fucking damn it! Coming from the other room.
And then there was a time you came in and you were like, hey guys, look, I'm playing Minecraft on my phone by clicking a button remotely every couple minutes.
Sort of cheat box.
It wasn't a cheat box. So, like, this is the degenerate crap that results from the systems that they have put into place. You want, they have introduced a certain number of enchantments that you just kind of want because they're really awesome. Mostly on the picks are the ones that are like super great. And so in order to get those, you need to, the most reliable way to get them is to be, you know, like level 45 or 50 or whatever when you try to enchant something.
Because levels in Minecraft are not really levels.
Yeah, they don't really mean
anything.
It's
just like energy juice.
Yeah. Which I think what they're like, I can imagine a design meeting where they're like, you know, it would be really great if we made these kind of rare and hard to get. And the best way to get access to these was just to play the game, right? Because eventually you'll level up by killing a bunch of stuff, assuming that you don't die.
I mean, you just die all the time.
Some
people do. My experience playing Minecraft is like, if you're not almost dead, you're dead.
Yeah. And so I made I found a skeleton spawner and I made a little device that like spawned a bunch of skeletons and then like transported them up and above the skeleton spawner and dropped them just far enough where they would have half a heart and then I could punch them in the knees and suck out their experience juice.
You have to kill them manually to get
the experience.
They'll drop their drops if they're killed by cactus or fire or whatever.
But they will not give you experience.
Yeah.
Huh. I guess that makes sense.
Sure.
Yep.
And so, what was I doing? I don't even remember where this was going.
Your iPhone.
Oh, right. So, it's pretty tedious to sit there and punch skeletons in the knees. What I didn't realize is you can just sort of let it sit there for 15 minutes and accrue skeletons, and then you can go and punch them all at once, which is a pretty effective way to do it.
So Minecraft has finally become a game where you can kill a skeleton and get a sweet bow.
Yeah.
Because they will occasionally drop an enchanted bow.
Yep. Yeah. If you kill a zombie, you can get a sword.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I'm doing that.
It's pretty cool.
Why do zombies have swords?
I don't know. The zombies have the iron stuff, and because the skeletons make sense, they have the bows because they're the ranged
bows. Yeah.
So they drop bows. Zombies sometimes have helmets and swords and iron ingots.
Huh.
Yeah, it's weird. And shovels. They will sometimes drop shovels.
Okay. Well, maybe they dug their
they do their themselves. Own grave.
I mean, occasionally you will accidentally. It's like when a doctor does an operation and accidentally leaves a scalpel in somebody. You'd be amazed at how many people are accidentally buried with a shovel.
Huh. Okay.
It's just that, like, that people are wondering, like, why was the second half of this grave digging job such a pain in the ass? And they're like, oh, right, okay, because we left the shovel down at the bottom.
Do you know this from experience?
It was just really, really high. It was the problem. Like, oh, man. Yeah, well, should we dig it back up? No. Just say somebody stole it. So, anyway. Phone. What, okay. You're having a really hard time. Yeah, you know why? So you know why? It's because you're fucking around on your computer.
I'm watching this roguelike progress without my Hitchhiker's intervention.
Yeah, we never should have started playing roguelike. probably my vote for the People's Choice Award of the 7-day roguelike contest for this year.
Right. So you have to do this manually, right? And I did not have any convenient way on my laptop to convince it that I was clicking a button a bunch of times or clicking a particular key a bunch of times. And so I was like, well, one thing that I have already set up is like a server on my computer that I can access from a remote control app on my phone, so I can just make an arbitrary remote control app that does what I want. And so I just made a little remote control that was just a giant single button that was kill skeleton, get sweet sword, which is not actually true.
You didn't really get a sweet sword.
I didn't get any sweet swords. But kill skeleton, and then I would hit that, and it would just punch 300 times with a delay in between in front of it. And that's it. So I was able to like do errands and stuff like that around the house. I could wash dishes and that kind of thing. And then I just, every couple of minutes, I'd click my...
This Minecraft sounds like an awesome game. Mm-hmm. I really want to play. This is a ringing endorsement.
Yep. Pretty sweet.
Did you poop in a sock then earlier because you couldn't actually figure out how to do that?
No, but I mean, like, that's the thing. Like, so it's the degenerate behavior, right? It's the let's get a bunch of experience over a long time, or over a short period of time, so that I can get these enchantments.
Why couldn't you just be happy to get the pick when you got it?
Because
why couldn't you be happy with a random enchantment like fun?
So the enchantments make the resource gathering 3 times more, like 3 times easier, right? Like I went from getting 1 diamond at a time to getting 3 diamonds at a time from diamond blocks.
So what you're saying is you think that you're so special that you should cheat the game to get more diamonds than everyone else?
Yeah.
Okay. See, I
that's
think
fine.
What I feel would be the right way to approach this, and I feel this way about a lot of grindy things in video games. Like I always said that what I thought they should have done in the DS Castlevania games, when there was a super rare drop off of an enemy, and we would, like, in our desire to get 100% of everything in the game, we would just have to kill thousands of these dudes over and over again. Like, if you have killed 50 of these guys, maybe the next time you level up by killing them,
right,
you just get their rare drop. Right, just
some sort of
cap, so that there's not just this crazy tail,
long tail
on the random generation of stuff. And so I feel like if they let you get random enchantments cheaper on gear, but let you pick an enchantment if you were willing to pay twice as much, you would still
like want to grind through the levels instead of having to accumulate them normally out in the world.
So is there a right way
through them multiple times for no benefit?
That's true.
I mean, is there a right way to introduce rare things into a game environment
that's like a single player game? I mean, like,
well, I mean, a single player game, it seems weird, right? I don't understand that really.
I mean, with multiplayer, you just have rare things, and because there's a player economy, it's not as big a deal. That said, some things are untradeable and still rare.
I mean, from a design standpoint, I can understand wanting something to be precious but not limited, right? And so rare is the way to do that. I mean, you don't want to make it so, oh, there's this really, really great potion. You want to be able to make a really great potion, but you don't want the guy to be able to use it every time he performs an action for the entire game. And so you need some kind of limiting mechanism, and that the extension of that is like super awesome potion, and it's super hard to get.
I mean, but why does that so often become something where the end result is Kevin playing from his phone?
Yeah. Because I mean that's what players will do.
But here's the thing: you have turned killing skeletons into a boring job, right? Like the people at Mojang did not build your skeleton spawner,
right?
And they probably don't like that. That's a thing that people can do.
I mean, they could easily change it.
Well,
if they really wanted to. Now.
There's a satisfaction of the cleverness in having figured this out, but I don't think that they thought that people would really, you know, they probably didn't think that people would do this, right? They didn't think that it was just sitting there with no danger,
sure,
punching a skeleton in the legs every 45 seconds or however often they spawn. They thought, oh wow, if somebody kills like a million fucking skeletons, we should give them something for it, and that'd be awesome,
right?
Right.
No, and I mean, so, I understand, like, the design point of view, but I also understand what players will do, and so.
No, but
so,
is,
I
mean, is there a better way to do it?
Who made it boring? Like, did Mojang make it boring, or did you make it boring?
This is not something that I would have cared about as much before they put the system in place, right? Like, there used to be mob spawners, and you used to do them to get the drops, but then you would fill a chest or two, and then you'd be done because who cared, right? But when there became this like experience thing that like let you enchant a bunch of stuff, and like you have four gear slots plus four different kinds of tools that you can enchant plus weapons, like there's just a bunch of stuff that you can enchant, and if you want to enchant all of those at level 50, it's going to take you days and days and days just of grinding to do it. If you were to try to do it naturally, it would take you would never have a complete set of enchanted stuff.
Well, maybe you're not
stuff.
Supposed to have a complete set of enchanted stuff. I mean, okay. That's the...
Or why is it always that a random dropper enchantment is the go-to, as opposed to you can do one epic enchantment every 3 days? I mean, that would make it rare.
Sure.
You know, real time, or, you know, in a multiplayer game.
Your system clock forward, right?
Well, I mean, Minecraft has a server, right? I mean, it's server environment.
Well, but I mean, I don't think most people play Minecraft on a multiplayer server.
You think?
Server.
Yeah, it's pretty popular. Yeah, I mean, everyone I know who plays Minecraft plays on a server.
Well,
even outside of the group of, you know, KOL players.
Yeah, okay. I mean, to me, it was enough of a hassle to get one set up. You know, it was either figure out how it works and do it and have a server that you can run it on, or pay like $10 a month, which I guess people are willing to do that.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, both on the player side and the developer side, there is a problem.
No, I agree that it's a kind of a bullshit system, but I can also understand
So I'm not complaining about it.
I think the reason that Rarity...
Well, I am complaining about it, but I don't have an obvious solution. If there was an obvious solution, I think there would have been a move towards it. I think the reason
that Rarity is so often introduced into games via just a low rate drop is because it's easy and it's effective, right? But the problem with it is that it creates shitty experiences for a certain percentage of the people who are
messing with it. There's only so many Kevins in the world. There's a lot of people that just said, oh, maybe eventually I'll get a cool enchantment.
Yeah.
After I play the game for a while, the way that they thought I would play.
I'm curious what the breakdown is. You know, I don't think it's possible to know those kinds of numbers, but I really am curious, like, what percentage of people who play the game bother doing this kind of stuff? Because there's a ton of people who just, you know, play it to build a house.
I finally found some diamonds, and I built an enchanting table, and then I wandered around and found as much reed as I could carry, and then I was like, well, I could sit here for 2 hours and grow enough reed to make enough bookshelves to fully power this thing up, or I could just go out to this dark hillside that's by my house and kill whatever monsters spawn, and then take whatever levels that I get from that and go see if I can crank up go see if I can get like a level 5 enchantment on the sword that I've been using to kill these dudes.
Yeah.
And I did, and it made a sweet glowing knockback sword, and then I made a sweet fire resist helmet.
Yeah.
And I was like, that was pretty fucking cool. And then I logged off and I don't know, went and did something else.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. A lot of the stuff I would never have known or figured out.
Right? I mean, this makes me think of Skyrim, right? So Skyrim, I've been playing along. I'm like level 23, but I'm getting my butt whooped because I discovered that I could spam illusion spells on the guards and vastly out-leveled that to all my other abilities because I couldn't resist spamming it in town and gaining tons of levels of illusion. Courage, you cast courage on guards, and they're like, oh, I'm ready to fight, and then your illusion levels up. I'm like, this is really stupid, and I shouldn't be getting levels from this, but I can't resist because it's leveling me up. And it kind of made the rest of the game seem a lot lamer now.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, Kevin couldn't stop doing this stupid bug with the fortify restoration or
whatever.
Well,
I mean, I did. I, like...
I just stopped playing.
And then I was like, this is a dumb reason to stop playing. And so then I went back and I, like, made a... I picked one thing that was really bothering me about the rest of the game, which was, like, carrying capacity. And I was like, okay, I'll make a plus 7,000 carrying capacity.
I saw a video on YouTube that was like, hey, check it out. Here's a way to level up a bunch for free in the tutorial. And it's like, there's one guy in the tutorial who you can't kill, and he doesn't get mad at you for hitting him with a sword, and he's just on a he's on like a timeline track that he follows. So just hit him with a sword as many times as you can for the entire duration of the tutorial, and you'll probably be like level 7 by the time the tutorial finishes, just from leveling one-handed or whatever. And it's like, okay. Okay, but that's dumb. You have taken your experience of playing this video game that is awesome, and you have made it into something really dumb.
Yeah, it's hard to resist that, I guess. I mean,
it's hard
for
us to resist.
Yeah, I mean, I don't.
You seem to be immune to it, and whatever.
I mean, which one am I of Mark Rosewater's
Timmy?
Yeah,
you want to experience big things and swords?
I want stuff to be cool. I guess there's also another guy. There's Vorthos, it's Spike, Timmy, Johnny, and Vorthos. And Vorthos is really concerned that the theme and mechanics of the world align.
He's the guy who knows about the world more than the creators.
Yeah, so I think it is possible that I would have figured out how to make an enchanting table. I think it is unlikely.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, right. If I had seen one,
well,
I would have. Probably
there's a picture of one in the achievements list.
Oh, okay.
Right. So it's like it is possible. That's why I think it's possible. But I do not think I would have ever figured out that.
I mean, we had this conversation years ago when we first started playing Minecraft. I would not have figured out fucking anything.
Well, but they have added the achievement thing, which gives you a bunch of hints about stuff to do in the game.
I should play Minecraft again.
So I think it is possible, but I do not think I ever would have figured out that you can boost the power of it by having bookshelves around it.
Right, and because you would not have wanted to make a cool, thematically appropriate room for your enchanting table to be
in. But they have to be in a very specific position. Right? Like you build a room.
Yeah, but that's exactly where you would put them if you wanted it to be cool.
No.
Yeah, it is.
No, it isn't. Yeah, it is. Anyway, I don't think I would have figured that out. And so I would have only ever had access to levels 1 through 5 for enchantments anyway, right? And that would have probably been okay. It's the fact that, like, I have all of this knowledge from seeing other people play.
I didn't realize that's how it worked. I didn't realize that there was a cap on the...
Yeah, it caps at level 5, and for each bookshelf you add, it adds a certain number of additional levels. And yeah, they have to be in a very... There's like 50 is the cap if you have all of the right bookshelves in all the exact right places.
It's a lot saner if you treat it as a thing that you can put a bunch of level 5 enchantments on your iron sword.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, and everything except for my picks, I have level 1 enchantments because there's just no point.
It is, that is a game where it bothers me a little bit, but not as much as I thought it would. When we first started playing a really serious amount of Minecraft, it was on survival multiplayer when it was very buggy. Mm-hmm. So there were no monsters.
Right.
And there was a bug, which I also could not prevent myself from exploiting, where if you had a pick that had some wear on it, you could drop it, pick it up, and it would heal it. And you didn't take damage from falling off of stuff, so it was a lot less risky to build really tall structures. And as they fixed all those things, I was like, I don't know if this is going to be as fun now. But I got used to all of them.
Yeah.
But the degradation of... Like, I have... either not a lot of patience or really terrible luck at finding diamonds. And so the fact that you like make, all right, I want a diamond pick so that I can get through shit really fast, but then it just like eventually breaks. And you're like, fuck this.
Yeah.
That's not fun.
I mean, I have a diamond pick, which is both really even faster than normal and lasts 4 times as long.
I remember how disappointing it was when I made a gold pick and it just immediately wore out and broke. Like, I mean, I guess that makes sense
thematically,
right? Yeah, I mean, you know, but I'm no Vorthos.
They've done a really good job in sort of like making everything have a meaning and a purpose. Like gold stuff is much easier to enchant than anything else. But it is weaker.
Really? What does it mean easier to enchant?
It's easier to get high level enchantments on gold.
What stuff. Does it mean it's easier to get high level enchantments?
You have to spend less experience levels to get a high level enchantment on something that is gold.
So you just get a discount?
Kind of, yeah.
How does that manifest? How does that show up?
I mean, you if you do a level 25 enchantment on a gold pick, it is...
Oh, it could potentially pick what would be a level 40 enchantment on mm-hmm. something else. Okay.
On the diamond stuff, huh. Yeah.
Okay.
That sort of makes sense.
So... It's a way to make gold more valuable.
Yeah, that's neat. I'm gonna make some gold stuff when I play Minecraft again. I mean, sweet gold hat.
You just gotta keep doing it until you get a fortified gold thing, so it lasts longer.
Oh yeah, man. Although the armor doesn't seem to wear out.
Yeah,
very quickly.
I don't know.
Having gotten just killed by creepers 30 times,
they finally made armor more interesting too. Instead of just having the different kinds of armor be more sort of durable. The stronger the armor, the actual more armor protection you get.
But what are those? Do you lose those instead of hit points? Like, I've never really understood what that little armor meter was for, because it's like, in my experience of playing Minecraft, anytime anything damages you, you die.
those are all sort
also,
of
I'm
like,
playing it's without a, eating, so
yeah, it's a relative relative absorption rating. I don't know exactly how it works.
Okay.
So your armor takes most of the damage if you're wearing armor.
I see. But it takes it in durability.
It takes it in
durability. So that meter doesn't go down.
No.
Okay. So that's weird.
I mean, it goes down when your armor starts to break off.
Well, right. When you take off your armor, that meter... That's a weird thing.
Sure.
That's misleading. It's misleading UI design. Is there anything in the news?
Let's see here.
I heard that Prey 2 was getting canceled, and everybody was very sad
about
that.
I don't even know what Prey is. I don't know.
Prey was kind of bad.
So then why does anybody care about
why are people sad?
Because there were some previews of Prey 2 that made it look really good, and people were pretty excited about it. They're making, apparently, a sequel to Epic Mickey that's not actually a sequel to Epic Mickey, but a sequel to a good game, so people are kind of excited about that. Fucking, like,
Kid Icarus... But it's still Warren Spector. I don't understand.
Kid Icarus came out for the 3DS, and people whose opinions I trust are talking about it like it's really good, which is surprising.
It looked terrible.
Yeah, it did.
I thought it looked pretty good.
No. Yeah?
Yeah.
I don't know. It did not look like... I mean, what we wanted out of a Kid Icarus game was a game that was like Kid Icarus, you know? And this seemed to be a whole different kind of thing.
Yeah, so that's fair. That's fair. BioWare might be changing the ending of Mass Effect 3 based on the uproar by people.
That's a little upsetting to me. Like, I mean, you know how I feel.
People are
stupid, and people who make video games are awesome.
I don't know what the ending is right now. So I don't want to get spoiled about it, and I don't want to spoil any of our listeners that haven't played it.
Managed to avoid any spoilers about it.
It sounds like it was really disappointing, but maybe it's because like it was depressing or something. And I'm like,
yeah, my
maybe that's what makes it a good story.
The things that I have heard are either that it is like, you know, maybe people are upset because everyone dies,
yeah,
or it's because it is like an uncertain ending where there's some big question that doesn't get answered. And I'm like, oh, you mean like in the best stories?
Yeah. Which if either of those things are like how it currently ends, then that's awesome. What if it ends with a super happy, like, everyone gets puppies ending, and that's what people are pissed off about?
Yeah, there's like 30 minutes of,
then maybe it's okay
like
for people to be pissed.
Soft gay porn, like the end of Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Like, you could have just... I don't know. I think what I need to do when we get back to where I have a real computer is I need to just, like, hole up for a couple of days and play it so that I will know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Before the game changes. Before they change it.
Oh, yeah, before they change the ending, man.
So... Yeah. That's something to be aware of. Mozilla came out with an HTML5 MMO.
Yeah,
browserquest.mozilla.org.
I played it in Chrome just to be a dick.
Yeah,
so it's weird that they would make a game just to be a proof of concept for a technology.
Yeah, I mean, the Mozilla Foundation is basically their purpose is to push forward web technologies. Firefox is one of the pieces of that, and the HTML5 standard is another. And I mean, was
Godzilla part of their family?
Godzilla?
Yeah.
No.
Did he push forward the
Dogzilla?
I'm level 1,121. By the way,
what about Dracula? is Dracula a member of the Mozilla?
No other monsters are in the Mozilla Foundation. But it's it's neat. It uses WebSockets and HTML5, and it's got sounds, and you can click, and
it's fairly responsive. It's as responsive as an MMO.
Sure.
Swing a sword at a thing, and later,
I mean,
pops
Zach,
up.
Zach and I were playing, and a few seconds later, we appeared on the same screen, and we both killed a monster together with our swords.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You get a power-up that turns you the Firefox effect, and you get this cool glowing fox outfit.
Yeah, it's like a tanuki, but with smaller balls.
Yeah.
And or you're orange.
Yeah, it does look exactly like a tanuki.
Yeah.
And you can download the source code for the client and the server. They've got it on GitHub. It's pretty neat. It is kind of neat that it's all a browser. It was, you went to the site, you typed in a username, and you played.
Okay. Did you see that Bastion port to Chrome?
I did not.
Bastion runs natively in Chrome. The browser.
Chrome has, WebGL. They've been working on the WebGL renderer in Chrome. So you can just do 3D OpenGL type graphics.
That is crazy.
There's an HTML5 version of GameMaker that if it is as full featured as the normal version of GameMaker, there's like basically nothing stopping you from doing anything in a browser.
You can make Internet Explorer.
Yeah, there was a post on the GameMaker forums that was somebody like, so, you know, such and such, can I do this and this? I'm asking because I'm trying to make an Internet Explorer. Like, trying to figure out, is this guy trying to like recreate the browser Internet Explorer in Game Maker? And how?
What would that even mean?
Or was he just doing a bad job of explaining the genre of the game that he was making? It's like a cyberpunk game that's all about finding stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Internet Explorer.
Or maybe a game where you explore Wikipedia and you have to destroy the links and prevent
people... Oh, man, so that nobody can ever get to philosophy.
Prevent the knowledge from escaping or something. I could see something.
That's Internet Exploder.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a typo. The guy was not a particularly adroit typist.
But yeah, that's he a pretty cool adroit technology demo. It's not the greatest game. I guess there's some achievements. Some people played it a lot.
Yeah, I got some achievements. I got an achievement for finding a sword.
Yeah, me too.
I didn't get to kill any skeletons. I saw a skeleton, but I was being chased by a giant. So I didn't. Normally, I'm the kind of guy who will stop and kill the skeletons.
Stop at anything.
Rather than just rushing through my workaday world. But
that's what it says on your car.
Yeah.
We'll break and hit skeletons.
Yeah. It will break, get out, kill a skeleton, and get a sweet sword.
Atari is trying to make Pong a thing. They got a contest going on for indie developers. You submit a brief about the game you want to make, and then there's a round
based on Pong. Or
yeah, it's submit us how you would make Pong in 2000. What year is it?
12.
How would you make Pong
it's the old
today?
Deuce odd AC Deuce.
And then the winner gets $100,000, and Atari uses their name and the Pong name and publishes it in the App Store.
Wow.
Wait, do they make who makes the game?
I think you have to make the game. So I don't know that it's a great deal for the developer, because you got to make a game that you might not win.
You have to make a game for only $100,000, even
well,
if you
sure.
do win?
Sure.
No, you can't make a game for less than $100,000.
Yeah, I don't know how that works. But it was interesting. I mean,
how would you design Pong?
I don't know. I thought about that briefly, and I was like, probably have some paddles, and maybe you hit a ball back and forth. And then if you miss, the other person gets a point.
So, I mean, I feel like the evolution of Pong is Breakout and then...
Or Wii Tennis.
And then nothing ever again.
I mean, Wii Tennis is Pong, right? I mean, Wii Tennis is our Wii Tennis.
I mean, in a way, draw something is like Pong, only the ball is figurative. The ball is...
In a way.
The ball is ideas. And the paddle is you drawing
finger.
A dick.
Giving someone their digital finger.
But I mean, Pong is tennis. I mean, we have modern
it's table
tennis.
It's ping pong.
But yeah, I guess Arkanoid. I mean, I guess Pong, where you could also shoot at the other person.
First person shooter Pong.
Oh. Okay, Pong, except you can shoot at the other person. There is no ball, and the other person is a fleet of some sort of invaders from space.
Oh, that sounds good.
Okay. And then you got some shields.
Yeah.
And occasionally there's a
bloop,
red,
bloop, bloop,
red guy at the top.
Oh, a saucer.
A space saucer.
All for the past 5 days, as Zach's been working on his Game Maker game, I keep hearing the sounds of it, and it really sounds like some game from my childhood. I think it's TI Invaders, but all the demos I found of TI Invaders on YouTube use an emulator that doesn't produce sound.
Was there a game on that calculator called the TI A Carrera?
No, that was the TI 99-4A, not a calculator.
Okay, I'm sorry. What, is that a computer?
The TI 99-4A? I mean, everyone had one of these.
Right?
Speech emulator?
Would it translate from English to Spanish
it was
for you? Is this that thing from SkyMall?
It was a silver a computer.
Wait, was it a man made of wires that you could put wine bottles into?
Yes. That's what I played all my childhood video games on.
Was that guy? Oh, boy. Your parents were poor and you had no idea.
Occasionally we hooked up a tape recorder to it and played Tunnels and Trolls, or so we thought. We just heard some sort of Tunnels and Trolls. Yeah, it was like a D&D game.
Well, clearly.
But you put in a cartridge,
yeah.
But then you loaded the levels off of a tape drive or something like that.
Cassette, okay.
A cassette. Okay.
So you would just put the tape recorder in that wine bottle guy from Sky Mall and play it.
Yeah.
So it just sounded like static and beeping.
Yeah. I mean, it sounded like a modem before I knew what a modem was.
Did it actually load a level?
The wire guy? No.
He just sat there with some wine in his knee. Yes, it did.
So you actually played it?
Yeah, we did play that.
Okay. You made it sound like you just put the thing in there, and then all you would hear would be the...
That was the computer that, like, set me up for life, because then I would get stuff out of Computer Byte magazine and type in games with the extended basic cartridge.
Okay.
And I would play them for, like, 3 weeks straight, because I didn't want to turn it off, because I had no way to save them.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, you couldn't save them. Yeah, like, you could have. I realized later, you could have saved it to a cassette drive, but I didn't really understand how that worked when I was a kid.
You needed a good tape recorder.
We had one that came with the TRS-80 color.
Wait, you just used a regular tape recorder?
Yeah.
You could.
Yeah, oh, my God. Could. Really?
Because the computer just had an audio out. Like, RCA RCA cables were how it saved
incredible.
Out to the tape. Yeah, but the computer... My dad bought it from a buddy of his, like, secondhand. And it came with, like, a Radio Shack-branded tape recorder that was made for that, but also worked as a regular tape recorder.
What is it doing? Like, what is it? Is it like a modem?
It's a modem, but it's just... It's recording it and then playing it back to itself.
It, like, modulates
later.
And demodulates.
Oh, really?
And there's some... There may be more error correction
I always thought there was no error correction, because it seemed like it only worked half the time when you tried to load something off a tape.
Huh. I never had any trouble with it.
I remember a lot of peeking and poking in those things that I would type in.
What was that, like, super old Commodore 64 game where you... It might have been called Monster Rancher, or Monster Rancher might have been a sequel, sort of spiritual successor.
I thought Monster Rancher was, like, on the PS1.
Yeah, so I think it is a game that was, like, a spiritual predecessor to Monster Rancher.
A spiritual ancestor.
Yes, because it was...
A ghost dad, as it were.
You would get monsters and you would, like, breed them and get... other monsters, and you'd fight them in an arena, and it was really cool.
Was it on a little plastic game system?
It was a Commodore 64 game.
Was it Pokemon?
It was not Pokemon.
Pokemon.
It was way, Pikachu. Way
what,
predated.
What were those things called? Tamagotchi.
Tamagotchi.
It way predated both of those things.
Were you guys just throwing Tamagotchis at each other?
You would take
two Tamagotchis and squeeze them until one of them broke, and then that's the Tamagotchi that won.
No.
That sounds probably
You're thinking
like
of M&Ms.
Right.
And also, if you tried to raise an M&M as a pet, I think you'd be really disappointed.
It would never hatch.
Yes.
But it will never melt in your hands.
Well, if you sat on it to, like...
to brood it.
I think you would also be disappointed.
Chris, you've also been playing gratuitous...
Space Battles.
Space Battles. How's that?
It is really hard.
I should say you've been watching Gratuitous Space Battles play itself.
For those who aren't familiar, basically what you do is you start the game, and then it shows you a map with some enemy spaceships on it, and then you carefully build your spaceship in that you pick a hull.
Spaceship or fleet?
Well, you can design each spaceship.
Oh,
so
geez.
You can design fighters, frigates, and cruisers, which have different number of hard points for weapons and different number of soft points for crew, energy, shields, defense. So there's probably a million choices just with the base set that you can make the ships. And then you deploy them, which means you drag them into your deployment zone. And then you can click on one or a group of ships and give them orders like... You should give 80% priority to attack other frigates. You should stay near the other ships. There's commands like you should try and pick off the weakest enemies. You should attack enemies that are hurting your friends. You should protect your friends. So you do that, you know, so you spend a half hour doing that, and then you hit go, and you watch the battle play out.
And once you hit go, it's like irreversible.
It's gratuitous.
Does it play out the same every time, or can you... have a build that you were like, that almost worked, so should I just re-roll this
I've
fight
never tried until... that, because that seems... It's normally... I mean, I've never had one that was that close that I thought that would happen.
Okay.
But you can zoom in, you can watch each of the little fighters, like what they're doing down, you know, it's very fun to watch.
And do they have like sim style things that pop up over the spaceship? Like, I got to go back to this capital ship because I really have to poop.
Not quite, but they do as you're fighting, you got to read out from your ships the whole time. Like, oh no, they really got our lasers. Oh, did you see that enemy over there? Like there's constant chatter. It's fun. It's hard. I don't know how long I'll keep playing. I mean, I've played like 10 battles because I lost a bunch of them a bunch of times. And there's a multiplayer where you upload your deployment and challenge a friend, and then they create a deployment, and then you watch it play out. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's worth it in that I got it as part of the Humble Bundle, and I'm sure I got some other fun games too for whatever, $30. And I mean, it's definitely worth some money.
Okay,
if you like deploying ships and watching them fight.
Did you see that there's like a Wing Commander mod that's been 10 years in the development that's just been released?
10 years? That is so long
what
ago.
What is it a mod of?
The Wing Commander.
Wing Commander 3.
Oh, okay.
Was it Wing Commander 3?
Okay. Yeah. It's like a fan-made extension of Wing Commander 3 that all the reviews say if you enjoyed Wing Commander 3, you'll be riveted.
Was Wing Commander 3... when did that happen? Because I mean, I only played Wing Commander 1.
Me too. Yeah, me too.
And that was like there was not actually any like 3D tech going on in there. Like all of the enemy ships were just sprites.
Sure, but you were flying through 3D space. Yeah,
well,
actually, I think I mainly played Wing Commander Academy, which was after Wing Commander 1, which was just battles with that lion dude draining you. Weren't there friendly aliens that were lion
creatures? The lions were like the enemies in the first Wing Commander.
I don't remember.
Well, maybe you made an alliance if you won.
Yeah, maybe you did. I don't know.
That was the game
based on the Kazin from Larry Niven's stuff.
That was the game that made me buy a joystick. Fancy flight joystick.
That was the game that was the first time that my computer ever gave me chills when I installed a sound blaster. I installed a sound blaster in it and I loaded up Wing Commander and that orchestra warming up thing for the Origins logo popped up. And I was like, oh man.
Yeah.
This is gonna be fucking great.
I think Wing Commander was the first game I played with a sound blaster and I was like,
I got Wing Commander because I got a CD-ROM drive and a sound blaster. I mean, because I had to hook the At that point, right, I hooked my CD-ROM drive through my sound card or something insane like that.
Yeah, you had to do that so Redbook Audio would work, and so that you could play audio CDs.
I didn't have a CD player. That's crazy high tech.
You didn't need that cable, but it was
okay.
That was during right after that was the period of time when I had the job building and fixing computers. And so it was a lot of. I used to actually know stuff about how computers work.
Yeah, those were the days.
There's a bunch of cables they hook together.
I was also excited to have a sound blaster because I could finally record the parts of They Might Be Giants songs that had stuff backwards in them and then play them backwards so that I could hear the hidden messages from them.
That was totally the future back then.
I think the only song I've done that with is that Radiohead song.
The Radiohead song that's a palindrome. And you recorded it and played it backwards and you were like, what the fuck? Why did I waste all this money on this sound blaster?
Same thing.
That was sometime around the time I went out and I spent like all the money I'd saved for years to buy like a 8 meg hard drive or 120 meg hard drive or something insane like that.
I spent my entire first paycheck ever on the HP DeskJet 300 dot matrix. No,
it wasn't dot core.
Was it? HP Blast dot corn. Hey, so the assignment, we kind of went nuts on the assignment. So it turns out that Rock, Paper, Shotgun games from the 7-day roguelite competition was more like a list of 5 random games from the 7-day roguelite competition.
Yeah.
So anyway, the assignment was the 7-day roguelite competition entries, and we all played a bunch of different ones, I think, because you guys both
played
maps.
Some of the same ones.
We did play some of the same ones.
I probably have overlap with all
of them. But if you want to play, you go to the number 7drl.org/roguelikes.
Yeah, that's a much better list than any of the other lists that you find just Googling for it. So I played one. I'm just going to go through these in the alphabetical order in which they appear in this directory.
We'll do this like Boggle. You go through your list. And then he'll go through the ones he hasn't done yet, and then I'll, you know.
Fair enough.
Okay. So I played one called Cogmind, which seemed cool. You're like a robot sort of core, and you start out in a junkyard and you move around and you have to pick up like parts that are like different legs or treads or propulsion or whatever, and then you can equip weapons and shoot other dudes. But I didn't really explore it. The controls were really terrible. Here's the thing about roguelikes. It's a game that just a programmer can make. And when you play them, you start to realize why it's important that games be made by people other than just programmers, because they are often incomprehensible. Just downloading these was such a fucking challenge, because that you'd go and it's like, all right, here's my entry in the 7-day roguelike competition, and it would be like 9 links deep from whatever he linked to in his crazy website. And then maybe it's a download link, or maybe it's not.
Like none of the ones I tried were like that at all.
Quite a few I played were the ones that were playable on the web, because I could just click a link.
Yep. Yeah, man. There was one, I tried to play the Dune roguelike, could not figure out how to download. Like, I found a place to download a Mac version of it, but it said it was developed for Windows natively, and there was a Mac port.
I couldn't get that to run.
It was like a fucking, like a, it was just a GitHub page that it linked to, and I could not find where to download the binaries.
Well, he only had 7 days.
I looked at some screenshots. Yeah, he only had 7 days, so you can figure out how to fucking, like, the most prominent thing on the page would be click this to download this fucking game that this page is about.
So that Cargo Doom Bot game was cool, but
Cogmind. Yeah, I couldn't really figure out. I didn't spend a lot of time on it, and the controls were really terrible. I had to go to the help to figure out how to, because you could like install a part on you, and then you could left click the part to activate it, which meant that it started consuming energy out of your power plant or whatever. You could right click on it to get a description of it, but that description of it, even though it like covered up the whole screen, didn't have anything else that you could click on it. It didn't have any verbs or anything. The way that you close the help menu when you open it is to hit ? Again. So that took me quite a while to figure out. But in going to the help, I realized that, oh, of course, to unequip a thing, you control left click it.
Okay.
Yeah. No, it was
so it was an interesting concept, but
it was an
poor
interesting
execution.
Concept, but I couldn't really figure out how to do much of anything. You start out in this like square room, and the only way that the environment seems to expand is by these excavator bots that are autonomous, and they run around when you do just like digging holes in the walls. And I blew one of them up, and I took their mining laser, but I couldn't figure out how to use the mining laser to cut a hole in the wall.
Was it turn-based?
Yeah.
So you had to like walk around so that the autonomous guys would drill through your room?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Now suddenly I feel like they were maybe walking around with it, but no, they weren't. Also, I have a hard time, like, I don't feel like they've really, in a roguelike where you're just hitting a dude with a sword, it's pretty easy, because it's just, when you try to move onto a space that's occupied by a monster, you hit it with your melee weapon. But all of the ways that I've seen of implementing, like, shooting ranged weapons in a roguelike are kind of clumsy.
See, the robot one that I told you guys to play,
Robo-Captain.
I didn't have a problem with that.
Really?
I just hit F, and then if it was the wrong guy, I hit G, and then I hit G, and then I hit F again.
I did a lot with the mouse, actually.
Yeah, the problem that I had with the mouse on this Cogmind thing was that it would... So it would target an enemy. Like, if you clicked on an enemy, it would target it, but then after... Like, if you hit the button to use the targeting, it would move your mouse to the nearest enemy. It would just jump the mouse cursor.
Weird.
Like, oh. Yeah, that's right. Huh. A lot of compromises made in the 7-day nature of this.
Yeah.
So then I think we both played that Dark Knight Forest 2, which was just a sort of real shitty... It was like a first person running around in a forest that was randomly generated. So that's this roguelike.
No, I did not play that
one. Then you swing a sword at some guys that look like those sort of play school figures.
Really?
Like, with a spherical head and a cylindrical body and a shield and a sword. And the first time I played it, I hit a dude with a sword and it splattered blood on the screen, and then my computer just completely locked up. So I tried
killed
it again,
your computer.
Yeah, killed a guy and then killed another guy, and then I got killed by 3 guys. Then I played Drill Worms, or I forget what it was called. There was one that was like Ascent into the Depths of Below. And so it was like, yeah, we've discovered this this underground dimension called the Depths of Beyond. No, it was the Depths of Beyond, not the Depths of
and
Below.
The entrance is above us.
Yeah,
so
we have to ascend to the entrance.
I thought you said descend.
No, it was Ascent to the Depths of Beyond was the name of it.
Huh.
Yeah. You started out even lower. That was weird. You're from beyond in this. And so... Yeah, Drill Worms was like sort of black and white, and there were a lot of objects to pick up and things to put on your dude that made you better. It's called Drill Worms, but all the enemies are spiders. Could be from a country where the word for worms spider and spiders. Worm is the same. I mean, a spider is really kind of like a worm coiled up with 8 smaller worms sticking out of it.
Hanging off of it.
It was like 5 worms. 4 of them make like a bridge, and then the 5th one wraps around those 4, and that's how spiders are born. Fictional roguelike. Fictional roguelike just did not consist of anything.
There was no game there.
There was not really a game.
It was just a skeleton of a roguelike that you walked around. I mean, I killed thought some
it
kobolds.
Looked pretty cool because it looked like graph paper.
Yeah, the aesthetic was really nice. He seemed to be really proud of the systems that he'd built.
He built a context-free grammar system to create text, which I couldn't find any other than...
Well, yeah, I couldn't find any of either. Everything.
The
descriptions of what? There's nothing
to... A chair. It was like, this is a chair. If you looked at a chair, if you looked at a pillar, it was like, there is a pillar here. but that text wasn't in the... Yeah, I don't know. It was context-free, I guess. Yeah. Like, it wasn't in the file. There's a file that's like, you know, fictional.grammar, but a lot of the text that was in the game was not in that file. So I don't know. No. Yeah.
I went down all the way to level 4 because he implied that there was a game that if you got to level, there were 4 sub bosses, and then at level 16, there was a big boss, I think.
I quit after level 3 because I assumed nothing was happening.
I killed the first boss and nothing really changed. So I stopped.
You were just in a barracks and then a barracks.
Did you level up barracks, or something?
And then a musty library.
Because like, I only had 4 hit points.
Musty room, so a slimy room.
How would you kill something if you only had 4 hit points?
Hit it.
Played a bunch of Fuel. I played a little bit of Fuel. It was hard and
super hard.
Is it a roguelike? The controls were really finicky.
It is kind of a roguelike.
I mean, it's turn-based. It's randomly generated. It has permadeath, right? So
is that? Yeah, I mean, I guess I was trying. As
it's
I was
side,
a lot
it's a
of these,
side view as opposed to a top-down view.
Any
which
game
is a
with
different.
Roguelike elements is a roguelike.
I guess it has to have one, and it's roguelike.
Yeah. So any game with permadeath, like White Wolf's new their World of Darkness MMO, they have confirmed that there will be fucking permadeath in their new commercial MMO.
Really?
I think though.
I thought that was canceled.
Yeah, that's the one that was canceled.
No, it's not canceled. They lost a lot of dudes from it, and I think their schedule got way less aggressive. That was the only announcement that they made.
They're doing Eve for PS3 first.
I don't know, man. They were doing that Dust thing, and then everybody got mad about monocles, so then they had to fire 90% of their dudes. Maybe they talked to an economist, and the economist said, you know, you'll have more money if you stop paying 50% of your dudes. They were like, okay.
I thought it was like 20%. It was the staff at the U.S. office.
Yeah, the U.S. office was the one that was working on the White Wolf game.
I mean, they're still making announcements about it. And this announcement was that I think that there is a player-elected vampire lord. Like, so you can become like vampire boss, and then if the vampire boss kills a dude, the character gets deleted. Like, it's permadeath if you're killed by one of the boss.
Wow.
Kind of cool.
The boss hogs. Yeah,
I mean, it'd be interesting to see what that actually looks and feels like. I mean people that try cool new
things. So permadeath isn't like anytime you die. It's only in very specific circumstances.
Yeah, what this looked at was when you get killed by boss vampire.
So if you just piss off that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in a way, that authority being wielded only by somebody who has been elected is sort of interesting. I mean,
yeah.
It's just
yeah.
Like,
and it know. Makes it interesting. I mean, it makes all the other players want to gather social currency per
se. So this
se.
Seems like a thing that is a really cool idea to talk about, and it is probably just going to suck ass, and all we're going to hear is stories about how horrible it is to actually play that game.
I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
I played another one of the 7-day roguelikes called Hope, which was like you'd have 3 dudes, and there were all these different tile sets that were mostly just graphics ripped off from other games. And like when I first started, it was like, oh, this is a roguelike, except it's a Legend of Zelda tile set. And then there's like a Mario one.
Huh.
Although I don't think they're so much ripped off as like artists' interpretations. Then I played one called Hyper Rogue, which was sort of confusing and on the outside of some sort of hyperbolic geometry. It was, you'd move to a space and it was adjacent to either 6 or 7 spaces, depending. I don't know.
How does that
exactly
work?
Well, it's like on a sphere.
Oh.
Although maybe it's not
when
on
you
a
said
sphere.
Hyper, that to me that implies a fourth dimensional.
I didn't exactly understand what was happening, so maybe there was some maybe there was some serious next level shit going on.
Like a hypercube. Yeah, if you were playing on a hypercube, that would be really hard to conceptualize, but probably really easy to program.
And I think
so that makes a lot of sense actually.
So it had this deal where it was like it would stop you from dying if you had any move that would result in you not dying. Like it was like a sort of a check thing going on. So it was like you can't go here because the whatever would kill you. And then, so you always had a move.
Well, unless you didn't.
That you could make. Well, no, because if you didn't have a move, it was game over.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. So as long as the game is still going, you know that there is a move that you can make.
I see.
Right. And then I tried to play that Portaleucis game that you guys just played the ever-loving shit out of.
So great.
But the Windows version of it just crashes as soon as it gets through the intro. And it made
me didn't
really
try
sad.
The non-bug fixed version, which might have fixed a bug that it wasn't crashing.
That's true. I played. Well, I'll let you guys talk about Portaleucis because that's all you're going to do.
Yeah.
Worm was like, it was a roguelike that was sort of like Snake, where you're a dragon and you have to eat stuff and you get bigger, but then monsters can attack any part of you. So it's like Snake for the Nokia only.
Okay,
yeah, so that seemed like it's sort of like an interesting strategy game. When you started, it has all these sliders that control the difficulty, like enemy density and stuff. It's crazy configurable. And then I played a little bit of that I Rule You Rule We All Rule.
That's a good one.
School Hyrule. Yeah. I did not play it as much as Chris did, but yeah, anyway, that was my experiences. Now you go.
So I also played Fictional Roguelike. I'm going to list them in order of least cool to most cool. So it started with Fictional Roguelike.
Take that Fictional Roguelike douche. Take your context-free grammar and explain what the fuck that means.
It was cool looking, but that was
there were a lot of people that just got as far as making a framework to later make a game on in 7 days.
And then there was a game called Roguelike.
Oh man, I forgot about Roguelike. Yeah, I didn't. We played that really competitively today.
Yeah.
So, and the competition involved holding down the key.
You'll notice I'm not even doing that.
Yeah, I didn't realize there was a glitch where you
tabbing out.
I'm currently 1,143.
How fast are you going?
I have no idea. It is scrolling off the screen.
Doesn't tell you anymore.
So the description of the game is that it's a linear racing roguelike.
Yep.
So it's you hold right and you run over these monsters.
Which give you experience.
There's control space to start the game and right to move.
It also has mute. Space will mute the game later. I didn't realize that if you held down right and then switch tabs, that it would just stick it in a state where you were holding down right. So what I did for a while was I had this free 6-sided die that I got from a MechWarrior promotion at GDC. So I put that on top of my right arrow and then I put my phone on top of it to weigh it down, and I let that go for a while. But then I accidentally closed my browser and lost all my progress. I was probably like level 900. It's a pretty sweet game, though.
It's a one-dimensional roguelike, which it is funny in that I feel like it was half a joke and half a like progress quest, you know, clone or whatever.
It was like progress quest, except you have to hold down a key.
Well, but you don't. I'm still playing it, even though I'm not even touching my computer.
He's playing right now.
I think they meant for you to have to hold down a key.
Speed was 67679, and then digits, it just scrolled off, so I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think they expected people to play it quite as long as we have.
Well, I mean, who knows, right?
I mean, after a certain point, you don't even see the experience that you're gaining because the guys are scrolling off the screen so fast that you don't see them until you've already run over them, and they don't pop the experience text until they're already off the screen to the left.
I think it is possible I'm going faster than the speed of light right now.
Yeah, you're destroying them with your sonic boom.
That's true.
And then your light'll boom. Light'll boom?
And then I played Robo Captain Doomsday.
Oh, yeah.
So it had a neat energy management system where you had sort of generic power and then three subsystems, and you would assign one of them to recharge as you moved around. You had shields, cloak, and lasers.
It was described as being inspired by the energy management system in like the TIE Fighter games,
okay.
which I never played.
I didn't either.
Yeah, I didn't. That didn't strike a chord with me, other than I said, oh, this is kind of neat.
I apparently,
the backstory is a Flight of the Conchords song.
Oh.
Well, yeah. There's. I'm pretty sure that all of that story was just directly lifted lyrics from that We Are Robots song.
Okay, that's kind of funny, yeah.
And you're trying to retrieve the Yendor crystal that the human insurgents stole.
Yeah.
So it's got some nods towards a lot of things.
I was disappointed in it. Like, the game I felt was pretty easy. I beat it, like, my first playthrough and got to the ending, and I was like, huh.
I didn't think it was easy. I was Kevin's really good at games, guys. Yeah,
No, but I just, it didn't, well, okay, so
you
I
beat The Binding of Isaac the first time you played it.
So I beat it the first time through, and I got to the end,
the turbo
and
button off.
The ending implied to me that you could actually get a better ending if you played through the game without injuring anyone at all. So then I played through it a second time without injuring anybody.
Wow.
And it did not change the
This
ending.
Is your disease, right?
But yeah, so Chris and I actually got some work done today.
I only played through it twice.
And you beat it both times.
And I beat it both times.
I hate you. I was intrigued because it's also another fully HTML5 game with sound effects, keyboard, mouse interaction.
Really weird. It seems like the level generation was extremely slow.
Really?
Like, there were really noticeable load times between levels for me.
Not on my machine.
Huh.
Well, you should
guys,
get a Mac.
You guys have the fancy machine.
Yeah, I enjoyed that one quite a bit.
Yeah, it was I think my only disappointment, and it was a narrative one, and otherwise it was a good game.
I mean, I and this was after coming have some of the less finished ones, but I enjoyed that there was it felt like there was actually a game.
Yeah.
There were some interesting, unique systems I hadn't seen yet, and an actual story.
Yeah. All of those things came together pretty
well. It definitely was a complete package, which that is a thing that I think a lot of these dudes do not necessarily know how to deliver.
Right.
And it's
in 7 days.
It's not... I was about to say, I don't know that it is that they can't do it in a week. I think in a lot of cases, they just maybe can't
Well, they just don't have... They don't understand all the systems involved in making a game. I mean, it's probably not something they do regularly or whatever, you know, which is fine.
I was really surprised at the number of them that were graphical. Like, I expected that these would all be just like written in C based on some public domain roguelike library that's been built up over time for these things. And the only way that they would differ is in like sort of content and systems.
Right.
But it seems like, a lot of people just really enjoy making these things from scratch using various technologies.
It seemed like maybe there were definitely people talking about using roguelike libraries that they've built over the past or that already existed, but some were, there were a lot of from scratch.
And then I also played Fuel, and I could not beat it. I played a bunch of times.
The number of times where you die at level generation,
that was
really,
super
really put me off from playing that game at all.
But I really liked the mechanic where you collect the coins and then use them to refuel in between levels.
I was annoyed that like on the couple of levels where I did really well and like had more coins than I needed that I couldn't save them.
Oh, you couldn't? I mean, I never had that problem because I'm not Kevin.
But I never got more than 3 monopoles. I couldn't, like...
I never got more than 1 monopole.
I had one game where I started and there was a monopole 1 space to the left of me. And so I once got 1 monopole.
I also really wanted a wait button so that I could wait for the falling ceilings to fall.
Yep. You had to move around and use resources.
Yeah.
Just moving used up your health resource, which was annoying.
Oh, really?
It's like Gauntlet.
Yeah, just every step your health went down.
Zybot's the roguelike.
Your jetpack would regenerate on its own if you didn't use it, but it was, you know, that was in the at cost of your health. So
we should enter this next year and make a Zybot's RL.
It felt like this could have been a fun game with probably what would be a day's worth of tweaks for the dude.
A bunch of control stuff, maybe a bug fixes, a bunch of control alterations.
Shooting, not being able to, even following the instructions, not being able to consistently shoot in a direction
because
the order in which you released the keys mattered.
But that could be you just make QWEAZCXD shoot
and
rather
I realize,
than control and an arrow key.
I realize that roguelikes are not necessarily supposed to be friendly to the player, but like if I'm right next to a guy and I shoot at him, we should not both die. Like, I feel like you should be generous and the player should...
The order of operations there.
Yeah. It was simultaneous kills, and it was super frustrating because, like, I feel like that is the one case where, like, you should be able to take an action and not...
I mean, and your bullet moves faster than the guy.
Yeah.
You would think.
But so you can't be standing next to something and kill it. You have to be at least one space away in order to kill it. And the level generation was such that was often hard or impossible. Mm. So it needed some tweaks. The level generation, I think, could definitely have used some help too.
It was neat that there was a side view.
Because you could play it like top as if it were top down because you had the little sort of anti-gravity belt.
You can only go north if you have a jetpack turned on.
Yeah, exactly.
Which uses up resources.
And if you have it turned off, you are drawn further and further south until you hit your head against a wall and die.
There was no jump.
You ascend further and further south into the depths.
Yeah. Then I played I Rule, You Rule, We All Rule,
You're the only one of us that won.
Yeah, I really don't.
It was by figuring out the snorkel was the most valuable piece of equipment. The
snorkel was by far the most valuable.
I went back and used the snorkel and I got closer.
I mean, I think it's a lot of luck, right? Because you basically, if you start a game and you can travel a lot because you get points for going to new regions.
We should probably like give a 5-second synopsis for all of these before
people can play them. I don't know.
I mean, they're all roguelikes. They're all.
I mean, this one, it's you and four NPCs
other NPCs
that are trying to get to 100% fame.
Yeah.
And the map it's laid out like the Zelda overworld, sort of.
Kind of.
Rooms have, I think, the same resolution as the Zelda overworld.
Oh.
And a lot of the rooms are just lifted from the patterns of trees and stuff.
Yeah.
The monsters were
annoying.
Really boringly themed.
Yeah, they're like forest monsters.
Brown forest monster.
White brown forest
monster. Giant mummy.
You get giant mummy.
You got points for like reputation points or fame points for killing capital letter monsters versus lower letter monsters.
You get artifacts.
Artifacts. Yeah.
And so Each room you saw, you got 1%.
Before your rivals. Could you kill your rivals?
You could. They were pretty hard to kill though. The monsters that poisoned you were really dangerous because they could take a lot of your hearts.
Unless you had a first aid kit. So was it possible to get more items?
Yes. If you got an item, you had to drop one of the two that you were carrying.
Oh, okay.
But I found a wand of magic missile.
I found a ring of regeneration. Oh, that sounds nice.
That was the one I got to 72% fame.
The only time I ever found an item, it was just an item. This is an artifact.
Yeah, there's stolen artifacts.
Those give you like 15% fame.
Yeah.
It was a fun concept.
Yeah, it was like a couple of new neat mechanisms and stuff like that. I mean, I had to play it a bunch of times to win, so. And then the game that I spent most of the day playing,
I'm sorry,
was one that Chris was like, oh, you should check this one out. It was called Portalucis.
It's PORTA space LUCIS.
Yeah, it's by a guy named Chris Whitman.
Who I guess works for Glitch.
Yeah. So what is that? Tiny Speck.
Yeah.
Is the company. So he's working on Glitch.
We haven't
so
d- met him because he's in Vancouver.
Vancouver. Yeah. And it is awesome. It has a little bit of writing in it, which is very good.
It has a lot of writing
for a roguelike. Yeah. Sure.
Well, I mean,
and like, it's very good writing.
It's like 3 pages of writing and 4 pages of writing.
And it's reactive to what's going on in the game. The game is more atmospheric than I think any other ASCII graphics game I've ever seen is. Like, it is just a fucking remarkable game.
Really good use of color. Just
It has a bunch of really simple but interesting systems.
This one we're going to try not to spoil.
Yeah, it has a bunch of simple but really interesting systems that interact in ways that you'll have to discover by playing, which is just neat.
And we spent the day trying to figure out what the secrets are, even though he says right on the page, you don't get sucked in, there's not that much to it.
Yeah, but I think I have this like just...
That could just be a ploy.
I have this like...
That's just what the doctors want
deep-seated
you to think.
Feeling that maybe there's something cool happens if you can do the right thing. And I mean,
we got
not,
to a point where something
so
different
hard.
Happened.
Yeah, we did. We got... Something different did happen... Because we got a little bit better at playing it, and I was like, "Oh,
and
maybe."
There were genuine like conversations, like, "What is this game about?"
Yeah.
Like, what what is going on in the story of this game because it is like unreliable narrator.
Yeah.
Unreliable third party omniscient narrator. It's so cool.
But even some very little touches I noticed. So when you're reading some of the text, it's like a conversation, and when you talk, you press the space bar for each letter or word.
Yeah.
But he programmed it such so you could just hold down the space bar and then it stopped when it was the other person's time and
you had to start again.
Disable the space bar so you wouldn't blow through all the text, but you didn't have to sit there and wait. Which is very thoughtful and
yes it is.
Yeah. Like it's just very clear that the guy cared about making this good.
It is
an extremely polished experience for what it is.
Kevin, are you playing again right now?
I'm not. I was playing up until 10 seconds before we started the podcast.
I want to try and play this on my computer at home in the hopes that it won't just crash at startup, because I only got to play it for a few minutes because I was borrowing one of your computers to play it.
Yeah.
But and I don't like
super good.
I don't like
it. Is super, super good.
Yeah, that was just a lucky find. That was a hidden gem.
I just looked for all the ones that play on a Mac, and then I went to all the web ones.
Yeah.
And then you stopped. Did you stop there?
Those were the ones. Once I got to that one, I spent the rest of the day playing.
Let's see. What do I have? Adventurers Guild I played.
Oh, is that the one where you have the four dudes and you have to pay them?
Yeah, so you start off with four dudes. Each of them has a salary and an ability. Like, Boris had a lot of hit points, and one of them has a whirlwind and a ranged attack, and you can choose which one is your front man, and then you have 24 hours
for your band.
Yeah. Gene Simmons.
You have 24 hours to get enough money to pay their salary, and then they go away if you don't, which was an interesting concept. I couldn't tell if there was actually a goal or a game to it and gave up after I died the first time, but it was enough to make me say, oh, it's a neat concept.
It seems like a weird thing where it's going to have a snowball effect, though. Like, if you can't get enough gold to pay your four dudes, you are probably not going to be able to get enough gold with only three dudes to pay three dudes.
I mean, I had the experience that maybe on level four, two of my guys abandoned me, but then the next day I had enough gold to get them back.
Mm. Oh, okay.
So they like stick around in the dungeon apparently, right, and just refuse to help you. Yeah, like, do you got any money yet, buddy?
I was gonna watch you get killed.
Swamp Monster Don. That was the one that I finished.
Like, it's a guy named Don whose nickname is Swamp Monster or Dawn.
Dawn.
It's a girl named Don.
You're on a island in a swamp, and you have to kill alligators until dawn. Which happens to come after you've killed 100 alligators.
Wow. Yes. So you are some sort of time god who brings about the dawn by killing 100 alligators. This is your curse. You were cruel to Zeus's pet alligator,
he cursed you. Alligators have frozen time using some sort of temporal spell, and each one of them
has one hundredth of the potion.
Maybe we've adopted metric time and we lost all of the night minutes inside alligators.
In addition to being the one that I played, it was interesting. It was the one I read the blog entry, and there was a post that said, hey guys, guess I'm not going to finish in 7 days. I really was hoping to complete it. And the next post said, hey guys, I don't know how to tell time. I finished. Here's my game. So he finished in 7 days.
That's funny.
I played Smooth Rogue, which was the one where basically you run around with a phallus and you swing it. And if the faster you move, you have a giant red phallus. It's 3D. It's isometric, real time, but turn-based.
Okay.
That was actually pretty interesting. Like, you moved smoothly, as though it was like a game where you were a dude running around, you know.
Yep.
But the monsters only moved when you moved, but they also moved smoothly. So it was like a normal game, like Robotron, where time only passes when you're moving.
So if you stopped, you could look around, plan what you're going to do. But then there was a mechanic that the faster you were going when you swung your sword, the more damage you did.
Oh, wow.
And that was represented by this giant red phallus that grew out in front of you.
So you're encouraged. I thought you were some kind of robot. Were you a guy with a
sword?
No,
I was a dude with metal armor and a
like a great big shield?
And
Because I thought,
I was on fire.
A robot with a dick and one of your balls was on fire.
But like, the power-ups were things like increased sword radius and stuff and increased speed, which was cool but also dangerous.
Right.
It was I don't know if there was a full game there or not. I don't know if you could win, but it was pretty well executed and interesting enough that I took note.
No, it's like a neat idea, too. Yeah. I mean, just a really highly granular...
It's so hard to explain, right? It's like real-time smooth turn-based. That doesn't mean
That's
anything.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Let's see. Oh, I played Ruins of Khal Ramin. I don't really remember this. My notes say couldn't get into mouse base, crashed in the second level of the first dungeon, Unity. So it was written in Unity.
Okay.
And it crashed.
Oh, it crashed. Yeah. But, you know, that wasn't a feature of like the narrative. I crashed in the dungeon.
Yep.
Okay.
And the last one, well, I played some of the ones that we talked about already, and I played Me and the Mutants, which was a real-time one in that the monsters constantly moved. I guess it wasn't really real-time. The monsters moved when I wasn't.
Okay.
You could create infinities. That was its shtick. Which creating an infinity meant you created a box with your mouse, and then the board was then filled with tiles with you in the center of that repeated. So like if you drew a tile that was half the size of the play field, there would then be two of you, but you could use that to like go through walls because it would like, if you tiled it across a wall, you could then move through that infinity into the wall. And then when infinity time ended, you were inside of it. And then,
but I mean, infinity time never ends, right? Like that's
well, no. Point of it. So the way you won was by you had to destroy the nine infinities. By
so this is a game made by somebody who only knew one word.
You would kill. Yeah, you would kill the mutants, and the mutants would drop. Come on. An infinity depleter. My final note is that it was really confusing.
I think Chris has lost it. I don't think he can handle it anymore. His infinity has been depleted.
And those were the roguelikes.
Wow.
Do you suppose that depleting infinity would increase or decrease cyberspace? Yeah.
It was fun, though.
I was really surprised at how many cool things there were in this contest. Like, this was totally worth doing. And I was dubious about that choice of assignment, whether it would end up being worthwhile or not. And I'm totally glad we did this.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, I feel like there are probably another half dozen good ones that you just couldn't figure out how to download.
Yeah.
Or play on your given platform.
God, such a fucking mess.
I mean, it seems like, hopefully the runners of this contest realize this is an issue and have some sort of standard format for submission such that the list can say game name, click here to play or download.
Yeah, that does seem like, because I mean, there's really only three options, right? Like Windows, macOS, Linux,
and a lot of web.
What I also wish is that at any point in that fucking roguelike org site, that there was like a table that had like, this is the person that made it and this is the game listed.
Well, that roguelike page.
Did it? Because
it had the name of the game and the name of the person.
Every time I wanted to find one that you guys had talked about, I had to forward search for it in the webpage because there wasn't a list that you could just scan.
Okay.
Yeah,
I don't know. And there was that wiki page, which didn't even have the Portaleuces. Yeah.
It had Portaleuces on it.
No. Because I went there, like when I was like, I cannot find this game, I forward searched for it, could not find it, and then...
Maybe it was behind you.
I could have sworn that it was from the seven... But that one was weird, because it was a list of some but not all of the entries, and then there was just like, it would say finished in parentheses next to them if it was a finished one.
It was in a different infinity.
Might have been in a different infinity. Yeah, I'm at a level 1160.
Yeah,
in roguelike.
It's slowing down a little bit.
I don't know. I mean, I've leveled almost 100 times since we got back from dinner.
Video games, hot dogs, 2012 game of the year.
Yeah,
roguelike.
Oh no.
Yeah, this episode's list of games that we discuss is going to be a mess because it is a bunch of things that don't sound like games, but actually were the games that we played.
Yeah.
Fictional roguelike, smooth rogue, hyper rogue. Hyrule, you rule, we all rule. Yeah, old school Hyrule.
I'm not going to type that into that.
Wow. Way.
It's going to break the carefully crafted layout of the videogameshotdog.com website.
All
right. So the assignment for next week, this was also a sort of a news item. They, a bunch of people, a bunch of dudes and at least one lady who's a friend of ours.
Yep.
They did a project called Apollo 18 plus 20,
yep.
which to celebrate the 20th anniversary of the release of They Might Be Giants Apollo 18.
20 years.
I know, right?
Oh, man.
They made an IF game for each track on Apollo 18.
Which includes...
They are largely short
ones
games.
For each of the fingertips.
All of the tracks. Fingertips ones are games that are exactly one move.
Yeah, that's great.
Which is pretty clever.
That's ingenious.
We're playing nothing but roguelikes this week. We're going to play nothing but short form IF games next week.
You can find that at pr-if.org/event/Apollo-18.
Yeah, you can also just Google search Apollo space 18 plus 20, and that's the first result.
Yeah.
I would recommend, this is a good thing to have in general, a program called Gargoyle, which is a universal IF interpreter.
Okay.
So they don't seem to be messing with the formats as much as they were 5 or especially 10 years ago in the sort of homebrew IF community. So Gargoyle, you just download it and you will be able to play any.
Can you play that on IF? Is Gargoyle available on all platforms?
I believe that there is a Mac version of it. It's a SourceForge project, I think. Also, really fucking hard. You search for it, you know what it's called, you know what it does.
Yeah.
Really hard to find the download link. And you know what else really bothers me while I'm complaining about the internet? Is when you go to try to download some software and you see a giant thing that says download now, which is actually a fucking ad for something else.
Yeah, I hate that.
Yeah, that's pretty frustrating. Anyway,
I used Zoom most recently, but I don't know if that still works.
There is. Well, does that support? Because these games are all either.
That's from 2006.
ZBlorb or GBlorb.
Wow.
I don't even know. Blorb. So Blorb was a packaging technology that got developed so that Z Machine games could have sound and pictures embedded with them.
Jeez.
So that it would support the format that the very latter day Infocom games had, like that King Arthur game or whatever, where there were some actual pictures and stuff.
I mean, if you Google Gargoyle IF, it's the first result. And if you scroll all the way down to the bottom, there's a really tiny link that says Google code page. And then you have to go there and then click downloads.
Yeah.
And then it's available for Mac.
It is available for Mac.
Windows, Linux.
So will that play all of my old Infocom games?
Yeah, if you have the, you need the .dat file and that's it. That was the big thing about Infocom. They wrote a virtual machine.
I've got Blorb resource files.
Yeah, that'll work.
Okay.
They wrote a virtual machine that they could then port to any system.
Right.
And the data files were the same across all. So if you can read the disks, you could buy the Amiga version of Zork, get the file off of it, and play it in Gargoyle now. Any Z Machine interpreter. It's that's tech is all straightforward enough that people just mastered it as soon as people started paying attention to it. What was that guy's name? Graham Nelson that wrote Inform, and the one that game Curses that was a demonstration of what the Inform engine was capable of, which was making a game that was fucking impossible and huge, spiraling, crazy, old school, incredibly difficult puzzle IF game.
Huh.
Yeah, so we're going to have some fun with these things. I had already played 3 or 4 of them. I think it is totally reasonable for us to play all of them in between.
I don't want to promise it because I don't know how involved some of them might be. But
I think that they are by and large not very involved.
Okay.
But yeah, so that'll be fun.
Because there's 30 or something games, 30 or 40.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, we're running a little long, so I think we do a listener's mail next week when we are back in the loving arms of the state of Arizona with its especially progressive politics that we all so love. And it'll be warm. It probably won't be raining on us the way that it is here, but we will be back to a wasteland bereft of culture.
That's true.
And we'll I'll be here in spirit.
And we'll miss San Francisco.
That's also true.
I mean, really, my heart will always be in San Francisco, where I left it, nailed to that wall.
Yep.
All right. Thanks for listening to Video Games Hot Dog, everybody. If you want to send us a question or send us a comment, like, say, you are particularly offended by something that I said, send us an email to vghotdog@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter and mention us on Twitter and say, hey, Zach, you're a butthole, and I don't like what you said about buttholes, at vghotdog.
Yep.
You can go to videogameshotdog.com, find all the latest episodes and all the earliest episodes, though I wouldn't recommend listening to those, especially if you're likely to be offended by me saying mean things about buttholes.
And if you are an iTunes user, you could do us a solid by giving us a review.
Yeah.
Give us some stars. Rate us a star. Some stars. Whatever, you know.
Yeah. You could rate us one star if you're like, these guys are jerks about my butthole.
Yep. It's true. That would be appreciated. Yeah.
Speaking of jerking about a butthole, I gotta go. I'll see you guys later.
Have a great week, everyone.
Bye, everybody.